seated. Thank you for welcoming me back into this pulpit again, this time in the midst of ragweed season, where my allergies have again assaulted me, so I apologize if the ends of some of my sentences get swallowed up. To remind you once again, I'm a minister in the United Church of Christ, which has strong ecumenical ties with the ELCA, recognizing that in some parts of the world, like New England, there are congregational churches everywhere and no Lutheran churches. And some places, like in Iowa, where I grew up, oppressed by the sight of Lutheran church upon Lutheran church upon Lutheran church by the time I got to my own church, the Lutherans needed a place to go to. And in the mountains, where they flood the Lutherans out and push the Congregationalists away, we all must bind together. Yes, indeed, it would not be a visit of me to Shepherd of the Hills if there were not a few Lutheran jokes, and my biggest joke of the day is the sermon text I have chosen, which is from the Epistle of James. And those of you who are familiar with Martin Luther may also know that he found little value in this epistle. If he could have found any excuse to get it out of the Bible, he would have done, but sadly, it is almost certainly authentic. And also, sadly, it is almost certainly written by James, the brother of Jesus, head of the church in Jerusalem, which we know from the book of Acts and from other non-biblical sources. I sometimes think we miss something when we take the context of these letters and the context of these gospels out, because James here offers wonderful advice for living. He says things like, "Who is wise and understanding?" and accuses people who are contentious of coveting something or of doing murder to something, using this language from the Ten Commandments to reinforce the behavior that he wants. And we look at that and say, well, okay, this is a good general rule. We should not murder. I never murder. We should not be disputatious because of things we want to get. I almost never do that. And so we look, oh, this is great advice for living. But then we do things like come to church meetings about the new carpeting in the sanctuary, and we argue and argue and argue because it's important. Someone might get turned away from the church because they don't like the look of the carpeting, or they don't like the paneling. And you've all been in these meetings, right? Because that's what goes through our head when we're arguing about it. And we don't think about being disputatious. We think, yes, in the big things in the world, I follow this epistle of James and the other letters. But what was the context of these letters? It was a letter from the head of the church to other congregations, talking about disputes within the church. This was the context of the letter. This is not a letter saying, when you are elected to be the leader of the free world, you should behave this way. That idea was not a concept that they had. It was, when you are arguing about the nature of the church, are you arguing from a basis of God, or are you arguing from a basis of your own desires and your own wishes? And it is that little micro level that we need to look at when we're considering the advice that he is giving to us. It is great if you get to be a big, powerful person, but in the first century church, this was not an idea that was really going to have much currency with early Christians. But in your everyday endeavors, you should do this. And I like to think, and this is my own opinion about this piece, that James here is sort of looking around and saying, what are we doing? Because as we know from the book of Acts and from some of Paul's letters, there was a huge dispute going on in the church between Paul and between James, between the gospel of the Gentiles and the gospel to the Jews, and this is where Martin Luther's disagreements with James and agreements with Paul come up. I was talking to a friend of mine this week who, by training, is an engineer. She spent a number of years in Portland, Oregon, and in Iowa City, Iowa, as an engineer. And she decided to stay at home with her kids, and so she left the workforce. She grew up in Iowa, she went to Portland, she came back. And now she says, well, you know, when I interact with other people, I don't really do anything very important. And she has book groups and she has play groups. And she said, I can't believe how angry they get. I can't believe how excited they get. I mean, it's a book group. I just don't understand. And I sat there and listened to her, and listened knowing the arc of the world that she had, the picture of the world that she had, where this was something she did that was not very important. It was not as important as her other family behaviors. It was not as important as the life she had led outside. She had an entire narrative that incorporated it. But I discovered in Divinity School, taking a class on public narrative, in fact, the class was at the Kennedy School of Government, where there were a number of 35, sort of 55-year-old, what we call mid-career people, who had had their careers out in the world, and for whatever reason had reached a point where they needed to take a year and re-establish themselves and find a new place to go. And so we're in this public narrative class with people who have been out in the world for a long time. And the first half of this course is describing what your story of yourself is and how you can get other people to go with you wherever you think you are going. And the second half of the course is, what do you do when you've done that, and a person over there has done the same thing, and you get together, and you're at loggerheads? What happens when this thing that you're convinced you are called to do and that all people around you need to join you on interacts with someone else who thinks the same thing? And one of the narratives in conflict we looked at was a thing called the submission and domination narrative. And what that is, if you ever felt like you couldn't control your life, if you ever felt like there are so many things I would love to do, but this thing stands in my way and I cannot move it, or this person stands in my way and I cannot move it, that you know what it feels like to be in a submission narrative. It's the idea that I cannot do anything. And I sat in that room, 50 people, almost all of them had had great success in their lives, and listened to person after person say, I was in a submission narrative. And what I learned from that was never to be put in that position again. And I sat back and said, well, that's a lesson that you learned. But these are people who had risen to positions of power. And they had not taken to the next step, which is where I think James is going in this. It is not enough to recognize that that is a feeling you never want to have again. You must recognize that it is a feeling you don't want anyone to have again. And the problem is, when we're in these arguments in the church, we're in these arguments in the book group, when we're in the arguments anywhere else, sometimes there's a person there who sees nothing else. This is their world. And to them, you or the decision or whatever is going on up front is what is affecting their entire life. They cannot see beyond what they're doing right now. And what James is saying here, and the beauty of what James is saying is, if you seek wisdom from inside this head, this is not wisdom. This is wickedness. What he is saying instead is, seek the wisdom from above. Do not what you wish to obtain. Do what God wishes you to obtain. Because if you start every day with the belief that you and all of those around you are a loved child of God, then you cannot be trapped. You have a firm foundation. You have a narrative that is told in this book and enough books to fill 10 times this room of the story of humanity. That is your story, and that is their story. And so if you are not acting as if this other person is a loved child of God, or if you see a person who is so trapped by the narrative, so upset, so histrionic, that you know they cannot believe that they are a loved child of God on the foundation of a powerful God who loves them and who wishes them to be happy doing the things that are wise, then that's where we have to step in and say, it's not enough that I don't feel trapped. It's enough that I must help this other person escape the trap that they are in. And imagine James, the brother of Jesus. The brother of Jesus who has seen his brother killed. And seeing people disputing what that death meant. When he knows Jesus was here to bringing the love of God to the people. Imagine that as he writes this and says, what are you arguing about? Yes, it is a big deal. Yes, it is a matter of life and death. But guess what? We're all on the side of life. Let those disputes fall yes, you need to decide what color the church carpet is going to be.
Absolutely.
And it absolutely is going to make a difference. But what's going to make more of this difference is people walking in and feeling the loved child of God.